Hi, everybody. Welcome to F This Movie. Technically not F This Movie. This is like an F This Movie prequel. Oh. So pretend this F This Movie takes place before all of the other F This Movies.
So this will somehow be worse?
Oh, this is definitely going to be worse, please. I'm joined tonight by a huge Star Wars geek, Mike.
Hey, everybody.
You had some Star Wars shit going on in your wedding cake, right?
I did. I had Leia and Han Solo on top of the cake.
And you dressed at your wedding as Slave Leia, no?
Yes, I did. And my wife was an Ewok.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was
Which
cute.
Is the one that dies?
Yes.
Oh, poor Ewok. So, yeah, you're listening to F This Movie. This, by the way, is the first F This Movie recorded in the new F This Movie studio. Actually, technically it's not. I did record the Scott Pilgrim podcast with Eric Asperschlager in this studio also, but
special.
We were technically in two different states.
Ah.
And by that, I mean drunk and sober. And if you've listened to the show, you know which was which. So this is our first sort of live show, not live, because there's no such thing as a live podcast recorded in the studio. But anyway, F This Movie, blah, blah, blah. F This Movie .blogspot.com. F This Movie Podcast at gmail.com, facebook.com/F This Movie, twitter.com/F This Movie?
I don't know.
How does Twitter work? What happens on Twitter? I have no idea.
DVD Verdict.
You can listen to us, yeah, through DVDVerdictPresents.com and, or iTunes. You can find us in iTunes. Just search F This Movie. Or you could also search most kick-ass podcast, and I'm pretty sure we come up.
Can I get something out of the way?
Yes,
I feel
please.
Like every time you are kind enough to ask me to do one of these podcasts, I should apologize for the Saw podcast again. So
I don't understand.
Well, because I feel so terrible that we
told people.
Yes,
like Saw is not that bad, and maybe it's more interesting than you think. And then they come out with Saw: The Final Chapter.
Yeah. So
which
really quickly,
just came out or is coming out? Is it out now? Did it come out on Tuesday?
I think it came out. If it didn't, okay. Yeah, I think so. So, just really quickly, I apologize once again.
Is that your plan to apologize every time?
I was thinking about it.
For the song. Yeah, no, I think it's a good...
It'll be fun for everybody.
I think it's a good bit to do. So, yeah, tonight, obviously, we're talking about Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, and there will be plenty to say about that. But before we even get to our usual, hey, have you seen anything good? And then Mike's all, I like Doctor Who. before we get into any of that, some big stuff has happened, like, in the last 24, 48 hours. And obviously the biggest is the, and I wasn't even aware of this, Alex, who's on the show all the time, sent me this fucking cryptic email that's like, Catwoman and Bane? Question mark. I have to think about this. And I wrote back, I don't get it, because I was out doing things in the community. And I didn't know the announcement had been made, so then he sent me a link. And I'm like, oh, really? So, yeah, they announced today, Christopher Nolan announced the casting of Anne Hathaway, not as Catwoman, as Selina Kyle.
Yes.
Which might be telling. And also, Tom Hardy has been cast for a while. It was announced that he would be playing Bane. And Mike, in addition to being a big Star Wars nerd, you're also a huge Batman nerd. Your thoughts. I mean, you are the perfect guy to do this podcast tonight, because I was going to bring somebody else on to apologize for the Saw podcast. It was going to be Tobin Bell, actually. He was going to apologize like this. It was going to be his little puppet by proxy. but anyway, they couldn't do it, so fuck them.
Sorry, everybody.
So your thoughts on this casting announcement.
Christopher Nolan has built up enough goodwill with me that I will just assume he knows what he's doing.
That's where I'm at, too.
With, you know, when Heath Ledger was announced, I was like, what? I thought that was crazy casting for Joker, and it was brilliant casting, it turns out. So it looks like he knows what he's doing, so.
Yeah.
I will hold.
Yeah. I don't know. Here's the problem. I don't know Bane from the comics. I mean, I know he's a character in the comics, but I never have read a single comic with Bane in it.
Okay.
I just today learned, like, he played this huge role in the comics because he broke Batman's back.
Right.
Big whoop. The guy's fine. Batman, I mean.
Yeah, but we were stuck with Azrael for a while.
I don't... What?
Okay, yeah, enough said. Azrael.
Instead of Batman?
Yeah, because Batman's back was broken.
Oh.
So this character Azrael took over.
As Batman?
Yeah.
Like as Batman or just like no Batman, just Azrael?
If I remember correctly, it's no Batman, just Azrael, but he took over the Batman books. So I think he, I assume he was chilling out in Gotham City, wow, doing everything Batman does, but while Batman was laid up.
Wow. That must have been thrilling as a reader of Batman.
Yeah, very.
Cool, I gotta get this new issue to see Batman be like, can you get me some more high C? And then Azrael go out and fucking fight crime in Gotham City. What's Azrael gonna do next while Batman watches a Law & Order SVU marathon? Alright, so yeah, sorry, that's exactly the same place. So, for me, the only Bane is the fucking Bane of my existence, which is Batman and Robin. Where he's just like, I'm Bane! Like, right? That's, I'm pretty yeah, sure.
That's pretty much it.
Him and Poison Ivy and fucking Mr. Freeze, the Ice Age! So that's Bane to me. I like Tom Hardy, but I don't know.
Me too.
And then, you know, I'm bored kind of by the idea that he's even going to do Catwoman, because again, it's like, do we have to do just all the same famous Batman villains?
Yes.
There are other ones to cover, you know?
But they're famous, I think, because they're, you know, for a reason. They're maybe the most interesting, or...
Okay. Yeah, I mean, sure.
I think Catwoman is interesting.
I like Catwoman. Really, it's just like it's been done, and the Joker's okay. been done. And obviously, the way he redid the Joker, it's like, well, you rewrote how this is done. And yes. So, again, like you said, I trust him because I was, not only was I like, what, with Heath Ledger? I was actually kind of upset about Heath Ledger.
Yes.
I apparently hadn't learned my lesson from Tobey Maguire and Spider-Man, which I was also against. I was against Heath Ledger. The difference is, while I was against Heath Ledger, mostly just because I thought he was too young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I knew that Heath Ledger was like a pretty kick-ass actor, and I don't really know that about Anne Hathaway.
Okay, I'll give you that.
She tends to bother me in movies because she's very actressy,
okay,
if that makes sense. I love her in Rachel Getting Married, but in that movie, her actressiness benefited the part.
Okay.
It made sense for the character. In a lot of other movies, it bothers me. But she'll look hot in the Catwoman stuff,
yes,
right?
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
So, again, like you said, I trust Christopher Nolan. The other sort of big thing, underwhelming thing, was the reveal of the cast of X-Men First Class.
I didn't see that.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Okay. It's underwhelming.
Okay.
I expect it to be like, wow, ooh, I'm so excited. It looks a lot like the Bryan Singer stuff. What I took away is like, January Jones will probably be hot.
Yeah.
As Emma Frost. Because almost anybody would be,
yes,
because the costume does all the work. Because January Jones, let's face it, she's beautiful, but rather sexless. Uh-huh. If you watch Mad Men, you would much rather be with several other people. Christina Hendricks obviously is the gimme, but even the other one, Fred Armisen's ex, Peggy, whose name is not coming to me right now. Oh my God. Elizabeth Moss. Jesus. Help me out, man.
I'm too busy watching Doctor Who.
That's right. You don't
remember?
Watch Mad Men.
No.
You're all like, is it? I fucking can't come up with the girl from Doctor Who right now. So.
Billy Piper.
God,
how dare you.
Listen, I'm diabetic and I'm low right now. And I'm drinking a Diet Coke and that doesn't help anybody. So you haven't seen the X-Men shit?
No, not yet. So.
And F this
we
movie
really
first.
Should.
We're going to stop recording. Look at the X-Men thing, and then we're going to come back having just seen it.
Ah, okay.
But you won't know, listener, although we could maybe just have like a 10-minute silence while we look at it. There's going to
be
an edit, and we're going to jump forward in time, and Mike will have seen the picture of X-Men First Class, and then we're going to talk about it, okay?
Got it.
Some Doctor Who shit, right? Pretend we're getting into a phone booth.
It's a police box, and then, it's called the TARDIS.
Right, sorry, police box. And then when we come back, I'm going to be played by someone more interesting. So, Mike, now you've seen the first images of the cast of X-Men First Class. What are your thoughts? Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Underwhelming.
It is underwhelming.
And again, it's not bad. It's just like I think we all expected something really sort of like new and cool because of what we've heard Matthew Vaughn is doing. He's doing it, period. And he's sort of put together a cool cast, except for January Jones so far. So I was really expecting to be excited, and it looked a lot like it could have come from, like, the Brett Ratner X-Men.
You know? Yeah, it's an underwhelming presentation as well. Like, I forgot about it already.
All right.
Well, who's in it?
Yeah, exactly. But while we were looking for that, listeners who aren't privy to what happened while the microphone was off, we found another picture that was even more recent, literally just released, of Kevin Bacon and January Jones. Some, like, Hellfire Club shots, and that was kind of neat, I thought.
Yeah, she looks good.
Yeah.
Which I guess is what you want from the White Queen, I don't...
Yeah, all right, once again, my whole movie news segment has fallen flat.
Yeah, I blame myself.
Listen, that makes two of us. No, I'm just kidding. Do we need to talk about Andrew Garfield in Spider-Man gear?
Oh, I liked it. Okay. I thought, you know, it just had that one image, but I thought the costume looked cool, I thought... He looked good in it. He was not too, you know, I like my Spider-Man to be skinny.
Right. With a giant head. Are you worried he's going to fall over at any time?
He does have a giant head.
He's going to, he's like a Spider-Man Pez dispenser. That's kind of what he looks like. Just giant head, skinny body. I'm worried.
Maybe I take back what I said.
No, I thought it looked good.
Yeah, I thought it looked cool.
It looked like the cover of a comic book, you know, and that was neat. And I never had a problem with the Sam Raimi Spider-Man outfit, but I didn't realize until it was gone how much I kind of didn't actually like that white webbing that was all over the place.
Yeah,
and now it's gone, and I'm like, oh, cool. That actually looks better without it.
How about Captain America, those screenshots we saw?
I'm intrigued, you know. You know, sort of like the purist in me just wants them to go with the traditional Captain America outfit. But I like the idea that, like, they're going period and they're going sort of more realistic. Like, no, here's a guy who put this stuff together instead of sewed a spandex Captain America costume.
Right.
So,
no, I thought it looked cool.
I have my hopes up, you know. I have to say I'm still looking forward, although the pictures underwhelmed me. Of all of them, I'm most excited about, I think, X-Men First Class, but I think that's only because of Matthew Vaughn, and I'm coming off of Kick-Ass, which I really liked, and Stardust, which I liked. But
yeah, I would agree. I'm completely underwhelmed by Thor.
Yeah, that's the problem. And maybe it's, you know, as soon as I see a... That's the only one I've seen the trailer for.
Yeah, that's true.
And maybe that's the problem.
Right.
Because, in theory, Kenneth Branagh directing a Thor movie is interesting to me, but the trailers... did not promise anything that excited me.
No.
So, yeah, that's third after Captain America and X-Men First Class first.
Yep, I feel like we're missing one.
Our Green Lantern.
Green Lantern, right.
Also seen a trailer, also very underwhelmed. So, yes. Right now, the ones I'm most excited about are the ones I know the least about. Yeah, I don't know. All right, so anyway, moving out of dork news. Mike, have you seen anything good lately? That is not Doctor Who.
Nope. How about yourself?
Okay, I saw a movie about Doctor Who. Just kidding. There isn't one. Everyone. Actually, there probably is.
I was going to say, actually, there is.
Not a theatrical movie, correct?
Correct. But I guess there are talks about...
I saw Dr. Giggles. Is that the same?
It's close.
It has a doctor in it.
Right.
I think they went to med school together. I'm not positive. Everyone. Have you seen any movies lately?
I saw Spartacus.
Okay. Do you know I've never seen Spartacus?
I think I did know that.
Okay.
So
it's not news. Right.
Maybe I should have acted like I didn't know.
Okay, in Spartacus, tell me.
Yes.
At any point in the movie, do you see either blood or sand? Because those are two things I associate with Spartacus.
You actually see both.
Oh my goodness.
You do. Does
Lucy Lawless get naked anyway? Yes. Because God bless her. She's a terrific gal. She was on The Soup last week, and she's a sport.
Oh, I haven't seen
it yet. Yeah.
I do.
Well, I ruined it for you,
though. Yeah, you did. Thanks a lot.
She's also a Cylon. Whoa! Bam! Science! That wasn't a spoiler on that show, right? She was never anything else, right?
No, yeah, she was.
Was she?
Yeah, she was a...
Like, fuck you guys, if you haven't watched it. She's a fucking Cylon.
She was a reporter. But you might find out the episode
in which
she's
quick,
introduced.
Right?
Yeah. At the end of that episode.
Yeah.
So you killed that episode for people, but...
Whatever. Fuck you guys. I won't reveal the final Cylons, because you're going to be so blown away. Just kidding. It's almost like... Remember that guy you met? Cylon. Can you believe that shit?
Oh, sadly, you're right.
Oh, come on. Especially the black dude? Come on. He's nobody. And then all of a sudden, he's like, really? He's a Cylon?
Jamal?
He's not one of the last Cylons. I'm talking about one of the... find out about him earlier. I don't know if it's before or after Lucy Lawless. Oh, I won't stop ruining it. Anyway. So you saw Spartacus?
Yeah, yes, yes.
There's Cylons in Spartacus, right?
There are.
That's where they started?
It's good. Probably a little bit too long for me.
Okay.
I'm going to upset people because people love that movie.
Really?
I think so. I thought it was good. I thought the supporting cast was wonderful. They carried it. Lawrence Olivier. Not so much Tony Curtis. I'm a big Kirk Douglas fan, but Spartacus himself is probably the least interesting thing in the movie.
Oh, that happens a lot.
Right, I was going to say. but no,
It was years before I knew that that was a Stanley Kubrick movie.
It doesn't feel like you wouldn't know.
Right.
That it's
sort of the least Stanley Kubrick.
Exactly.
Right.
It feels that way. No, I mean, no, I had fun watching it, but if I don't return to it for a while, that's fine.
Okay.
Couldn't wait to get back to Doctor Who.
Sure. Anything else besides Spartacus?
That's the most recent thing I've seen.
Wow.
I thought I was good with...
I mean, that's fine.
I've been watching Doctor Who and True Blood.
Okay. Spartacus.
You saw Spartacus. And then Black Swan. A lot of movies you guys have
covered
recently. A lot of movies in the theater. Black Swan, King's Speech, things like that.
Yeah. Many of which can be found on your top 10 list, which is available on fthismovie.blogspot.com.
Yes. Exactly. How about you, Patrick?
I was surprised to see Marmaduke place so high. I really was.
I thought it was underrated.
Yeah, no.
I thought you guys were... It's no...
I haven't seen it, to be fair. I haven't seen it.
It's no Ramona and Beezus.
I like anything that Owen Wilson is involved in. So chances are, I'm going to like it.
I think you will.
But I have not seen it yet.
Have you seen anything?
I have. I've seen a lot of stuff lately because I have this job now that requires me to be sitting at a computer for 4 hours. And so... And given the layout of the new F This Movie studio, I'm too fucking lazy to go up and down stairs to pull a movie to watch. So I'm just like, oh, Netflix Instant, bam! But before I get to Netflix Instant, most of which I won't remember what I've seen, I saw The Green Hornet.
I was hoping you saw that. I want your review.
Well, unfortunately, my review is mostly painful indifference. Not terrible.
Okay.
But also not really worth recommending.
Okay.
It's not enough of any one thing. You know what I mean? Like it's too much of a studio movie to feel like a Michel Gondry movie, but then it's like too much of a Seth Rogen movie it's this movie that's pulling in all these different directions and it never really finds a single voice.
Okay.
And it's a bummer because, again, it's been around forever and all these different hands have touched it and it definitely feels like that. But you hear different things that might have been. And I would have liked to have seen the Stephen Chow version, even though I'm not interested in, Kato implanting a microchip in the Green Hornet's head and controlling him like a video game, which is what Stephen Chow apparently wanted to do. I'm not really interested in that, but I would have liked to have seen him involved, and it turned out that Nicolas Cage parted ways. He was supposed to play the villain, but he wanted to do it with a Jamaican accent.
Yes.
Horrible idea, right? Definitely would have wanted to see that as opposed to, and Christoph Waltz isn't bad, but it's just the villain part is bad. They're trying to do something, they sort of have an idea, but like most things in the movie, it's just sort of halfway, it's like half of an idea not totally executed. So that was a bummer. Fine. I mean, it was fine. And like sort of Pineapple Express, by the time it gets to the last action sequence, you can definitely tell that they're just trying to destroy as much stuff as possible.
Okay.
Which I like,
Sure.
But yeah.
Trailers were underwhelming to me.
Yeah.
I want to see it because of who's involved.
Right.
But,
yeah, not something you need to run out and see. And again, in the middle of January, you could do worse.
Okay.
Nothing else is really playing. So if you're caught up on all the sort of Oscar bait and shit, you could do worse. But yeah, if it came out in the summer, I would say, oh yeah, don't bother.
Okay.
And then I also saw Blue Valentine.
Oh, how was that?
Well, very, very good.
Oh, good.
Very well done.
Oh, good.
I never want to see it again.
Just to too much of a downer? Or?
Yeah, and again, you know, there's that whole Ebert quote about how no good movie is depressing, so I won't say, like, oh, no, it's too depressing. But, yeah, tough to sit through.
Okay.
Uncomfortably... It's not even the subject matter. If you don't know what Blue Valentine is, it's Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams, both of whom are great, and neither of whom have done much for me in the past, even though I recognize, like, oh, they're both very talented, but I would never necessarily go see a movie, because I'm like, well, Ryan Gosling's in it? Fuck, I gotta go see it. Right. And even more so for Michelle Williams. They're both very, very good. It's about just them and their sort of relationship falling apart. It's like this autopsy on a relationship that has gone south. And it's not just like, oh, the subject matter bums me out. I don't want to see two people being unhappy. But it's like, it's so, I'm going to sound like a douche saying this word, so I apologize. Intimate in every way. And if you see it, you'll know exactly what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Even the way that the camera is like uncomfortably close for most of the movie, that it makes me feel uncomfortable. And again, that is what the movie wants to do, and right. It achieves its goals swimmingly. But it puts me in a place that I don't like to feel. Again, by design, but it's just not a movie I would necessarily revisit a lot.
Okay.
But very good and definitely worth seeing.
Is it a movie you would pick and choose who you would recommend it to? Does that make sense? Or
oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would tell. But, I mean, I feel like anybody listening to a movie podcast would probably want to see it.
Okay.
I would think. Listen, if you're someone who came across this looking for, like, Star Wars podcasts, Blue Valentine, not necessarily in the same arena as, like, if you're just looking for Star Wars shit, yeah, Blue Valentine, not gonna do a lot for you, maybe. But, you know, like, somebody who's listening to a movie podcast, yeah, definitely. But okay. I'm not gonna tell, like, my dad.
Gotcha. Okay.
Because, he just saw Avatar for the first time, and he loved it. And I said, well, you probably should have seen it, in a theater, yeah. Because that's... You're watching it on a TV, and you're saying, it's great, the dialogue is, I have no problem with. Like, well, you know.
Should you be judging him on
listen,
his love of Avatar?
I understand the things that are wrong with Avatar.
Yes.
Yeah, Mike is perhaps referencing the fact that I recently realized that Avatar didn't win Best Picture, and I'm all like, how come? I'm like, I'm like Flowers for Algernon, fucking Cliff Robertson, Charlie, where I just keep getting dumber when it comes to Avatar. It's just, I started sort of at his high point where I'm just like, no, this movie is terrible and here's why. And then as time passes, I regress and I'm becoming more and more the mentally handicapped Cliff Robertson.
And it ends with you buying an Avatar ornament for your tree.
It does. So it doesn't end there.
No.
Because the story is still unfolding. Because I'm like, Avatar didn't win Best Picture? I have no idea where this is going to go. Stay tuned, though, everyone. Because as the story unfolds, it gets worse.
I'm riveted.
Yeah, every time he gets a call, it's just like, what's it going to be now? You fucking... You're changing your name to some sort of Navi bullshit. Anyway, let's talk about episode one, okay? As long as we're talking about being a fucking apologist about stuff and, like, being really a fan of something that maybe you shouldn't be a fan of, why don't you talk about where you were at? Oh, okay. Before we get into where you were at in 1999 when The Phantom Menace came out.
Okay.
Let's talk about the fact that, listen, we know we're in a fucking minefield here because few movies have been talked about to death more than the Star Wars prequels.
Correct.
So we are not in uncharted territory here, and the challenge, of course, for us is to find something new to say about the Star Wars prequels, specifically The Phantom Menace. To the extent that there's a guy who runs a site called Red Letter Media who puts out a series of very, very popular YouTube videos where, I mean, they're just like 2-hour takedowns of the Star Wars prequels, and he does a great job. Yeah, and they run, you know, I myself have a hard time getting through them because he starts with these big ideas, and I love that, and he makes some really great points. But by the end, it's just this minutia where I'm just like, well, if you put any movie under that kind of a microscope, of course you could tear it to shit, you know. So if you really want to hear specific reasons why The Phantom Menace maybe isn't that great, definitely check out Red Letter Media. And our challenge, of course, is to not repeat the things that he says. But it's been a long time since I've seen it, so if I do, I apologize. It's not on purpose. And the reason we sort of came to The Phantom Menace to talk about on F This Movie tonight, almost a half hour into the podcast, is because they recently announced that Lucas is going to be issuing all of the Star Wars films on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time in HD. And of course, the fanboy community is up in arms because he's releasing the special editions of the original series on Blu-ray, and who even wants the fucking prequels? Meanwhile, lots of people will buy them.
You and I included.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so people are up in arms about the way that it's being released, much like almost anything Star Wars related now. I mean, the guy really can't win.
No.
But I watched the trailer for the Blu-ray release. And all it is, you know, images from the Star Wars movies cut together to the fucking John Williams music. And it was enough to get me excited about even the prequels. Because when you cut them in with all the good stuff, you're like, I don't know. I mean, with the music and everything, right. It's like, I will totally watch I will own and watch those, you know. Once, by the way.
Yeah.
And then you learn your lesson. But, so I got excited, and it got me thinking about the prequels again, and obviously, again, they've just been talked to death, but let's get into it here.
All right.
It's 1999. You are...
A confused boy.
A confused boy who has yet to touch a woman. No, I'm only kidding.
Barely.
So just talk through a little bit of like your excitement, the hype surrounding it, and then your reaction maybe to seeing it.
All right. The Phantom Menace, I will admit, holds a very special place in my heart. Because at that time I worked at a comic book store. All my friends who didn't even work at the comic book store hung out at that comic book store. We were there constantly. So I was fully in geek culture, just surrounded by geekdom. We're all Star Wars fans and could not have been more excited for a Star Wars movie than I don't think I've ever been more excited before or since for a trailer.
Okay.
When the trailer first premiered, I remember coming home from school, getting a call from my friend Adam saying, hey, we're going to a movie theater in Barrington, because before
it was Waterboy, like Waterboy and Meet Joe Black were right. The two, yeah.
They will show the trailer for episode one before, and if you stick through the credits after.
That's interesting. Right. I didn't know that.
Yeah, after the movie. So we all...
But like they weren't giving refunds. That was the deal, right?
Correct. Yeah, no refunds. So we went. We chose Waterboy.
Over Meet Joe Black? Wow.
Yeah. I'm pretty confident the entire theater was there for the trailer.
Yeah.
The trailer...
So they didn't love the Waterboy? Perhaps a little hostile towards the Waterboy?
A little bit.
Imagine what they would have been like towards me, Joe Black.
Right. About 10
seconds. Which I like, by the way.
I wasn't going to bring it up.
I do.
About 10.
I don't fucking feel bad about it.
Actually, I've never seen it, so I don't.
Well, chances are you're not going to like it, but I do. That fucking movie works for me. And it's one of those things. Again, we're talking about Star Wars, but here's the thing. Meet Joe Black, I go to see by myself in the theater in 1998.
Okay.
Literally by myself. Nobody else is in the theater, I don't think. And for whatever reason, that fucking movie worked on me. I was crying. I didn't care that it was 3 hours. It could have been six. I'm just like, I love Meet Joe Black. And then, you know, distance passes and you're like, well, obviously it was the place I was in at the time. Because that movie's not very good. Nobody likes that movie. So I'll watch it again every time that movie works on me. Whether it's a matter of putting me back in that original place or I just really like that movie. It was not just a function of, like, the mood I was in. I still like Meet Joe Black. Star Wars, go!
So, I can't wait for the Meet Joe Black F This Movie.
Oh, it's never going to happen. Never. What would be the point? I'll just be like, I like it. What? I like it.
So about 10 seconds into the trailer, the film cuts. And I thought there was going to be a riot. People were freaking out. Screaming. It was actually hilarious. You know, it was some schmuck up there who did it on purpose just to see nerds go wild.
Oh, you think so?
I don't know. It was so perfect
there. Yeah, right.
So everyone went crazy, but they started over. And it was the most... I mean, my God, we dissected that trailer wouldn't believe. I mean, the shot of Darth Maul, we refer to him as the red-faced guy. We didn't know their names yet.
Right.
When the second end of his lightsaber comes out, just blew our minds. Like, we were so...
Do you think a lot of the audience, grew second boners? I know. Out of their boner, another boner came out.
So that was... Yeah, so I don't think I've ever been more excited for a trailer, dissected a trailer more.
Okay, Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift? No?
That's up there.
Okay.
So we were completely caught up. Got tickets for the midnight show. When the toys went on sale before the movie ever came out, went on sale at Toys R Us at midnight. They closed at 6 p.m. that day. So at 6 p.m., we were the first in line. We got chairs.
Wow.
And we hung out for those 6 hours.
Was there a huge line behind you by the end of it?
Yes.
No kidding.
Gigantic. And for hours, we were the only schmucks still in line, which was hilarious. But we were prepared. We had food, drinks. The line was huge. So when the doors opened, it was complete mayhem. We had a system worked out, though, where a couple of us, we made camp in the store. And we knew what figures were available.
Okay.
And
what were the figures?
It was Darth Maul, Qui-Gon, Anakin. So two of the guys would keep track of what figures we had. And then myself, my friend Adam, we were runners. So, we'd run up with figures. And they'd be like, we need two more Mauls. Go, go, go.
And now was this just for your personal collection? Or were you guys also buying stuff for the comic book store?
Both.
Okay.
There's plenty for way too much for a personal collection, though. So I mean,
you're grabbing handfuls of stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I would have been one of these. I need an Amidala because someone needs to run this. Someone needs to be in charge.
But it was such mayhem.
Someone needs to lose a British accent.
I felt like we needed to scoop them all up.
Yeah.
So that was just an amazing night. I have nothing but fond memories of that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and then we all went to the midnight show, and that, even though I probably deep down knew what I was watching was not very good,
mm-hmm.
It was just, I was still on a high, still excited that this was stuff in the Star Wars universe that we had never seen before, characters we hadn't seen before. Darth Maul looked awesome.
Yeah.
Lightsaber battle was, unlike anything we had seen previously.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was, we went to the midnight show, and then, later that morning, we went and saw it again.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I really wanted to do because I felt like I could relax. I felt like I was not relaxed.
Right, right. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
First time around. So it was just an amazingly fun time for myself.
I remember there was a theater in Chicago. They weren't all doing this, but I know maybe Water Tower or somewhere was doing round the clock 24-hour showings of it.
That's awesome. I was smart enough to go home and sleep after the midnight show, before I saw it again. But
and so after the first one, you're still just holy shit. It was Star Wars and blah blah blah, and you almost don't care.
Yep.
You see it the second time. Are you still
not as
digging
much
on it?
Or no,
are you starting to poke holes in it?
I think I started to poke holes.
Okay.
But still enjoying it though.
Okay.
I was a. It's funny now looking back on it because I'm not this way anymore, but I was a Jar Jar defender.
Really?
Yeah, I was. But I think I was just blindly defending Star Wars because I watch it now. Like I was, put it on last night, in preparation for this podcast. And I was like, oh my God, I really have such a hard, I hate, I don't know why I feel like I don't want to come down on Jar Jar, maybe because everyone does, but oh my God, he is rough.
He's horrible. But again, you can't put, the movie's failure on his
and I don't
shitty Gungan shoulders.
Right.
The movie has obviously larger problems.
It does.
So, okay, it's interesting. And we talked ahead of time when we said, like, hey, let's do one on The Phantom Menace, again, in sort of in honor of the resurgence of Star Wars coming out on Blu-ray, which doesn't happen until, like, September. We're just way ahead of the fucking game.
And I'd say in honor of Natalie Portman at a career peak.
Yeah, really. And here she is sleepwalking through a series of movies.
Yeah, well, we can get into that later. But, yeah, I have thoughts on that as well.
Okay. Two Best Actress nominees prominently in Star Wars Attack of the Clones, by the way. Who's the second?
In Attack of the Clones?
Not Attack of the Clones. We're talking about Phantom Menace, which is the movie that there are two Best Actress nominees. Not this year. A previous Best Actress nominee.
Has Keira Knightley been nominated
previously? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, so that's her.
And I didn't realize how much of the movie she's in. She's actually in a lot. And she doesn't have her own voice, but like she's in there a lot. So, but we were talking about it, and we were like both of us agreeing that Phantom Menace, for whatever reason, neither of us totally hate, and of the prequels, it's probably the one that we're, like, the most okay with, even though conventional wisdom is sort of that Revenge of the Sith is the best, and right. It probably is, I am unable to go back and watch Revenge of the Sith. I don't know why, but I can totally go back and watch Phantom Menace.
Mm-hmm.
But we're sort of coming from two different places, because while I am, by blood, a dork, and I do like Star Wars, I really like Star Wars, I'm nowhere near the place that you are at in terms of Star Wars, how sort of closely you hold it to your heart and how many times you've seen it and how much you like Star Wars and how much you live in that world and how much you lived in that world in 1999. Because I was very removed from, I feel like, everything Star Wars in 1999.
Okay.
To the point where, I mean, I was definitely excited to see it, and I went... I had a friend who worked at the theater, so we were going to see, he got us in to see, I think we were going to see, like, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. I don't know why, because we got in free, you know? But before we went to that, we went to, like, I think Meet Joe Black and just stayed through the trailers and saw the trailer, and I was definitely excited about it. And then I started to see it a lot, and the excitement kind of wore off, you know? And I, unlike you, was trying to stay away from the frenzy.
We were trying to stay away from spoilers.
No. That I mean the frenzy, the midnight bullshit. Okay. Like, I was staying at my mom's house for like a week because she had gone on a vacation with my two sisters, and I was staying with her dog. I remember the week Phantom Menace came out, and I didn't go. It opened on like a Wednesday.
Yes.
And I didn't go. I was like, oh, I'm not going to be able to get within a mile of that theater for a few days. So I didn't even try. So I waited until Friday, and then Friday during the day, I was like, well, fuck it, I'll try. And I went with someone, to see it, to like a matinee. We had no problem. And I was like, okay, I don't know. Again, like you, it's hard to tell how I feel about this because I'm definitely excited when that crawl starts and the music.
Oh my
God.
It's
like, I'm seeing the first new Star Wars movie in 16 years.
Right. Just a 20th Century Fox.
Yeah.
When that came up, the audience applauded.
When it changes to the Lucasfilm. Yes. I mean, even in the trailer, like, that gives you such a thrill.
Exactly.
That you don't notice. It's like you aren't aware of the text that's actually passing in front
the
of you.
Text about taxes.
Because if you were, you would get up and leave. You would say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong... Oh, this is a joke. I'm in the wrong movie. I'm having a nightmare? I don't know what's happening.
Right.
So... And then, like you, I ended up seeing it a second time the same day, but not by choice. I went that night to see a different movie with Doug, actually, who often is on this podcast as well.
Yes.
Because, again, we thought on Friday night it was going to be fucking crazy. So we were like, well, let's go see something else, and then next week you'll see Phantom Menace. And we get there, and no one's there. And he's like, well, do you mind? Can we go see Phantom Menace? I'm like, ah, fuck it. Even though I saw it 6 hours ago, I'll go again. And, again, I don't remember how I felt about it, but definitely that summer of 99, a lot of great movies came out in 1999. Great year for movies. But it is still sort of defined by The Phantom Menace. I mean, I remember I was, like, collecting game pieces from Taco Bell. I spent a lot of time at Taco Bell in 99. I don't know why, but I was collecting these game pieces. So, like you... lot of, like, sort of fond memories just around The Phantom Menace, even though I don't have a lot of fond memories of The Phantom Menace. But I still think And I'm probably wrong, because like I said, I haven't been able to bring myself to sit through Revenge of the Sith again since I saw it when it came out. When it came out, I was like, well, that one is the best of the bunch, and that's the one that sort of redeems it all, and to the point where I'm like, I don't know, prequels, they might work. They don't. But I still feel like The Phantom Menace has things in it that work, whereas the others don't.
Correct. I mean, well, we can both agree that Attack of the Clones is the worst.
Attack of the Clones, there's nothing redeeming about Attack of the Clones.
I don't think there is.
Not one thing. And people might disagree with me. There's not one redeeming thing about Attack of the Clones.
Attack of the Clones, even, and I saw Phantom Menace many, many times in the theater. And like I said, the first time I saw it, I was just on a high.
Yeah.
And while I was able to poke holes in it, after multiple viewings, I still enjoyed it every time I saw it. It wasn't until I went to the midnight show of Attack of the Clones, still sort of caught up. And I remember sitting in the theater thinking, oh no,
yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Like yeah. This is not, like, I can't even fake this. I don't care that it's,
right.
It's like just the fact you knew, that it's Star
you knew
Wars
right away. Phantom Menace you didn't, and Revenge of the Sith you didn't.
No.
You got caught up in both movies. Attack Correct. Of the Clones, no. You knew right away.
You did.
That, fuck this.
Yep.
And the problem, I think, and I do want to spend most of the time talking about Phantom Menace.
No, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. But it's hard not to get into sort of this conversation about the prequels in general, you right. know what I mean? Because why address one when they sort of all work as a piece? And I don't mean that in the way that Lucas wants. I mean, like, they're all bad in sort of the same way.
Right.
The problem with Attack of the Clones was, even seeing Phantom Menace, and, you knew that there were problems and it didn't work, but you like you made apologies for it because you're like, well, no. It has to lay a lot of the groundwork.
Mm-hmm.
And the stuff that comes next is going to fix the problems. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
You just thought like, okay, but now it's going to be great.
Right.
And then Attack of the Clones starts and it's like, oh, this is horrible. This is a step backwards. And now there's all this fucking pressure on Revenge of the Sith because you're like, yeah. Well... of the prequel trilogy, he's already wasted two of the three movies, so now it's all got to happen in the third movie.
Right.
And to some extent, that's what he tried to do, but mm-hmm. it was too late, obviously, because he had fucked it up for two movies.
Yep.
Thinking back about Phantom Menace, I've always thought, that it's not horrible. And then rewatching it for this podcast, it's pretty horrible.
Yeah.
It's worse than I remember. However, there are still things that work. I Liam Neeson is not given a character to play, nor is he given any good dialogue, but he brings something. He gives a performance. He has a sort of a, as Kiefer Sutherland would say, a gravitas. It's his favorite word, everyone. Look it up.
Gravitas.
I won't say what his least favorite word is. but he has something that no other actor in any of the subsequent prequels would have.
Completely agree.
I mean, the guy, Ian McDermid, I might be saying that wrong, I feel bad.
The Emperor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Palpatine. He's good,
he's
and
fine.
He definitely, like, has fun and chews some scenery, and
yep.
as you get later on in the prequels, it's like, he's the only thing to fucking carry you through. Because you're like, no, okay, he's doing something. Because even Ewan McGregor, who I generally like... there's nothing going on. And it's not his fault, but, like, he's just not given anything to play.
No,
as much as I know that you love him saying, you were the chosen one! right? Isn't that the one that you like?
A little bit. Wait, I do like Ewan McGregor, but I don't know if it's because Alec Guinness did all the...
You like him in the prequels, even?
I
even in, like, Phantom Menace?
I do,
okay.
but I think it's...
Are you distracted by his wig?
Oh, horribly distracted.
What's
by
going
his
on?
Wig. I don't
those
know.
Reshoots? Because it's only in those specific shots where you're like, what the fuck is that?
They have to be. The one
he's
always,
wearing a carpet on his head?
Yeah, the one that always sticks out for me is right before they go into to see the Gungans when they first meet Jar Jar. It's painfully obvious.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's just I have affection for the character Obi-Wan.
Sure.
Sure. And... I like Ewan McGregor, but I don't know, but watching it this last time, he's not great in it, but I still really respond to him, and I was just questioning whether I'm responding to Like I said, my sort of love of that character already, or is he actually doing something with that character? I don't know that he is.
In the beginning, he's trying to sort of imitate, I think, Alec Guinness's cadence. Like, he's doing almost like an impression.
He does, which is in, which is another thing that I will admit in that first trailer.
I was going to say, in the trailer, everyone gets excited about that,
and
right?
I completely
he sounds just like him.
Yeah.
This is going to be awesome.
Yeah. I went crazy. Yes.
Again, now, I don't know if we're going to end up splitting this into two podcasts, because I almost feel like there's my head's going to explode right now, because there's so much to say, and again, like I said, it's been talked to death, so maybe we're not saying anything new, so I apologize if we're not, because I feel like there's a fundamental problem, and it goes back to, we talked about this on a previous podcast, this fanboy culture that is wants to see the beginnings of things.
Mm-hmm.
Prequels, I think, by nature, don't work. You think you want to see these things, but you're almost always disappointed. I can think of very few...
Batman Begins.
Right. And even that, A, we've seen a bunch of times. It wasn't giving us something new. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't really giving us anything,
I guess,
new, because we sort of already know a lot of that story. But also, it's very flawed, you know?
Well, yeah, no.
Redeemed by The Dark Knight. Right. But the one that jumps in my head, and again, it's not, we've had this conversation lots of times, it's not my favorite movie in the series, The Godfather Part II.
Yes.
Is one of the few examples of where it's like, you go back to something and show, here's how this started, and it works. But the reason that The Godfather 2 works is because of the present-day story that's going on at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
All the shit with Michael in Cuba or Florida or whatever.
Yeah.
And the Hyman Roth and all that. And the one is constantly informing the other.
Right.
And so I started to think, like, so would Star Wars prequels have been better if he was telling another story? Like, okay, let's say The Phantom Menace becomes a story about Luke and what happens to him next, but at the same time we're getting flashbacks to the early days of Anakin and Obi-Wan. And is that a better movie? It's hard to say, because that's not the movie that was made or whatever.
It is hard to say, yeah.
But in my head, that's the way to go.
Yeah, you might be onto something.
Because the prequels, they're a bad idea. They're a bad idea, because we know what's coming, so there's no drama. I mean, there's drama built in to the fall of this guy, you know?
Right.
But because we know exactly where... There's no tension, maybe? How's that?
Yeah.
Because we know what everything is leading to.
That's true.
And unfortunately, what it's leading to, where Star Wars kicks off, you know, it's like we have to see how an empire comes into power. And that's not terribly interesting. Maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe somebody could have made that interesting.
No, you're probably right. But I think, because I just love that universe, that was interesting to me. I was interested to know how the Empire went from...
You were? Or you thought you were? Because I thought I was too. Oh, that could be cool. Let's see what happens.
Well, I'm having seen it, I'm not terribly...
And that's what I'm saying. You think you want to see these things, but you probably don't.
But is it just because of... is it Lucas's fault? Is it just the way... Right. I mean, maybe...
And that's where I come down on, like, maybe. Maybe it's just the version that we saw.
Right.
But then I go back to, but it never works. If I could point to all these examples of, like,
it
could work because this did it, and this did it, and this did it, but because I can't, I lean more towards, you think you want to see this,
right. But
you don't, because every time you do, it's a crushing disappointment.
Right.
I don't know. Because, yeah, particularly The Phantom Menace, but all of the prequels are very much caught up in sort of political machinations.
Yes.
And, like... That's a lot of The Phantom Menace. All this sort of backroom political maneuvering, so we could see what? How exactly Senator Palpatine becomes emperor. so we can... I mean...
No, you're right.
Very little actually happens in The Phantom Menace that sets up what's to come. And that was the big problem with The Phantom Menace, but it turns out very little happens in any of the prequels
right.
to warrant telling this story. But The Phantom Menace in particular, because Lucas made the decision to start when Anakin Skywalker is a kid, and you're not going to see, again, when we heard he's doing prequels, we're like, oh, we're going to see how Anakin Skywalker goes from fucking Anakin Skywalker that Obi-Wan talks about. He was my fucking friend. He was a great Jedi. We were friends. He was my best student. We were going to see all that. And how does he become Darth Vader? And that fucking poster comes out of a little kid in the shadow is Darth Vader. Well, guess what? That poster has more exposition in it than anything in the fucking Phantom Menace.
Right.
Because nothing happens, particularly because he decided to start when he was a kid, and nothing happens in the Phantom Menace that tells us how he becomes Darth Vader.
No.
Which was going to be the story of the prequels, right? And again, I'm jumping all over the place
because
my mind is racing with, and maybe this has all been said before, and I have to keep giving that disclaimer because I apologize if you're listening to this and you're like, the fucking guy on Red Letter Media said all this. Well, I'll be honest. I don't remember anything the guy on Red Letter Media said except for one great point that I always point to with the fundamental flaw of The Phantom Menace, which is he does this great thing in the beginning about describe the characters, but you can't say what they look like or what their job is. And no one can do it.
Right.
Except they say Qui-Gon is stoic. Well, maybe. But is he? I don't know. and that to me, it's done.
Yeah,
you're
absolutely.
You're done. Like, the movie's not going to work because of that problem. So right. I will always be thankful to the Red Letter Media guy for that. But I don't remember anything else that he said.
Because you could do that with Han Solo.
Yes. Or he does it. He does it on the thing.
Okay, right.
They describe the Star Wars characters and people go on and on and on. And then they say, now do Queen Amidala. Because you can't say she's a queen.
Right.
And you're done. Because she's not anything else.
No. So Anakin is a boy.
So it doesn't work. Yeah, I don't even know where I'm at.
Asking why would Lucas start with him as a kid?
Well, his answer is because I'm making this movie for kids. I mean, that's what he always sort of falls back on, that he was making this movie for kids. But what I was going to say is, I don't know what I was going to say.
I always thought he started him out as a kid because it's a much more heartbreaking story when you see him with his mother, his mother raising him despite all these horrible things in their lives, and she loves him and he loves her and they only have each other and you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, so, and there's
so a, when you're watching that and knowing what he becomes, it's, you know.
Right, and I guess there's potential for that there.
I mean, maybe I'm just making excuses, but.
No, I mean, I
would assume
somebody else could have probably done it and started with him as a kid still, and it still could have worked, you know?
Okay. I go back to that poster. That poster, to me, is great. And it's great because he's a little kid.
Right. But nothing happens.
No,
would indicate. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
We learn a few things. Okay, so Senator Palpatine gets a promotion and he's put into power. Okay, great. And Anakin Skywalker is going to be trained to be a Jedi, and those are basically the two things that happen that matter in the overall story of Star Wars. Yep. That's it. The rest is all just kind of filler.
You say midichlorians are just filler?
Well, right. So we can get to that, but again, it's well-covered territory. But it smacks of a guy who doesn't understand his own thing.
No.
And there's all these people who whine, and George Lucas raped my childhood, and those people are fucking stupid. As soon as you say that, I'm sorry, you lose at life. Because what? Grow up.
Okay, you know? I was going to bring that up to you, because I don't feel that way
right.
at all.
You still have those movies.
Yeah, it does not affect my love for
And for guess what? Movies. Right, it does, and nor should it. And, you know, if your childhood is really ruined because he made a movie you didn't like, well, guess what? Your childhood was probably already ruined because you've wasted your life.
Right.
And ultimately, guess what? It's George Lucas's thing to do whatever the fuck he wants to do with it.
Completely agree.
What it should do is indicate to you maybe he doesn't really know what he's doing. And again, I'm not going to get into bash George Lucas. I like Star Wars. Maybe he's not the fucking genius that you think he was. Or maybe he's lost it.
Yeah, I was going to say, or he just no longer has whatever.
I would argue to some extent he never had it. Not never had it, but he never had it to the degree that he was built up to have had it.
I'll give you that.
I think that's more so what it is.
I'll give you that.
I think it's somewhere in between those two things, you know? That he lost a lot of it, but he also wasn't quite the guy that people built him up to be.
Right.
Because, yeah, you get the impression that he doesn't understand what it is that made Star Wars so special. And something like midichlorians is a great example of that. No longer is it this neat, mystic idea of the Force, of good and evil. It's midichlorians and tax debates and blocked trade routes. And it's a guy who's been sheltered for 20 years, who has lost touch with what made these things special, mm-hmm. and who has lived in this world so much for 20 years, because guess what? We fucking forced him to, because that's all we want from him. No, do Star Wars. Shut the fuck up. Do Star Wars. Okay. But now we've locked him in a Star Wars cage for 20 years, and he's like this autistic who has lived in this world for 20 years, and he comes out and he's like, guess what? I know the whole story about how different planets maneuvered and how people came into power, and I know what the Force is now, guys. It's midichlorians. And you can do a blood test and say, who's going to be a Jedi?
Right. Not to stand midichlorians, but that's,
Is the scene where Hope dies.
Yeah, right.
That's the scene that kills Hope. If Star Wars is a new Hope, that's... It has to be, because all Hope dies in the prequels.
That's true.
Yeah, that more than anything you can point to. And you can say fucking Jar Jar. But listen, Jar Jar is nothing but an epic miscalculation.
Right. And my buddy Adam, who I talked about earlier, was a lifeguard that summer, and he said every little kid that came to the pool had Jar Jar stuff.
Right.
So in some ways...
And that's what he was going for.
Right.
He wanted this movie to be for kids, and that's why he has a little kid in the lead and why he's running around going, yippee, and yay! There's a lot of that in the movie, by the way. It's not just the one yippee. Like, more than one character is doing the equivalent of yippee. But the problem with Jar Jar is that he's supposed to be funny, and he isn't.
Right, exactly.
You know? Even to kids, is he funny? I don't know. And there's fart jokes, and there's all this stuff. And you're like, what are you doing? This is beneath you. But he wants to make a kid's movie, right? Okay. But that doesn't jive with what the movie's about. Because no kid knows what the movie's about. I'm 33 years old. I watched this movie 2 nights ago. What?
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on? Because if I know, I don't care. And I can't bring myself to care, because maybe I have the mental capacity to understand, but I can't stop myself from checking out.
Right.
I could go back and rewatch a scene 3 times to force myself to understand, okay, what just happened? But I don't want to. I don't care.
No.
And I can't care. And again, I really think it's the result of George Lucas being locked in a Star Wars cage for 20 years. And this is what he comes out with. There's a great essay by a guy named Ryan Gilbey, who is a British writer and critic. He wrote a book called It Don't Worry Me, and it's about sort of the class of the 70s that has been written about a lot. Robert Altman and Brian De Palma and Martin Scorsese, and they're written at length, you know. But if you haven't read the book, it's great. It's called It Don't Worry Me. I already said that, but I'm saying it again so you don't have to go back the way I have to when I watch The Phantom Menace to understand what the fuck was just said. And again, it's not because the dialogue is impenetrable. It's because it becomes white noise.
Yeah.
I don't care. I can't become interested. Anyway, he takes each filmmaker and he writes about one or two or three movies that they've written. You have the book, but you haven't read it.
Correct.
Right? Okay, that's what I thought. You got to read that book.
I will.
Man, is it good. And he writes about Lucas, and he doesn't really talk about Star Wars. He's more interested in American Graffiti and THX. And, man, it's a great essay. And what he talks about is, again, that Lucas, to some extent, never had it to the point, to the degree that people say he had it. Actually, he says, no, he did have it. He had it in THX, sort of, and he had it in American Graffiti, and then it died right before Star Wars.
Right before Star Wars. Yeah. Interesting.
And
he talks, I do think American Graffiti's a great, great movie.
Yeah. And it's, like, sort of loose and more improvisational and more imperfect than any of other of Lucas's movies. And by imperfect, it's like they talk about Charles Martin Smith. There's a scene where he has to catch, like, a bottle or something.
Okay.
And he says, Lucas made me do it a bunch of times because he wanted me to not catch it. He wanted me to fumble it.
Okay.
And so there's this, right. And so now this doesn't, it does and it doesn't jive with what we know about George Lucas, because it doesn't, because here's a guy who had to go back, who will never stop going back and redoing his movies until they're perfect, quote unquote. He won't stop fucking with Star Wars because he wants it to be perfect the way he sees it in his head. Okay, so that's what he's doing there. But also, so it doesn't jive because, like, oh, well, perfect would be he just catches it, right? But we do it 20 times because he has to not catch it the way that I want him to. And he's this obsessive perfectionist. I think Ryan Gilby says the perfection of imperfection. And he's a control freak. And when he makes the original, when he dreams up the original Star Wars trilogy, what he is obsessing over, or what he's going for, is the construction of this old-fashioned Flash Gordon space opera, Joseph Campbell myth, hero's journey, right? Those are all the things that he's just feeding in, and that's what he's trying to create. And that's great. And even though we've seen it before, it's this new take on it, and it's we're doing it in space, and that's what he's trying to make. This makes more sense in my head, so I apologize. So his obsession there is the Joseph Campbell myth. But then again, he lives in a Star Wars cage for 20 years, and now his obsession is the universe of Star Wars. He's no longer trying to tell this larger story about a good guy and a bad guy and the reluctant hero who becomes the hero. It's just what happens in my Star Wars universe.
That's a fair point, yeah.
And so he loses us because he's totally cut off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
He's not trying to tell a story, really. I mean, yes, in theory, he's trying to tell this. The larger story is the rise and fall of Anakin Skywalker, you know?
Right.
But he never really does it because he's not interested in that. That's the story on paper, but the story that he wants to tell is this. It's just in the details. He's obsessed with only the details, and he's lost sight of the big picture. Because there is no big picture. It's nothing but details. Mm-hmm. Even the way that the films are made, where it's just crammed wall to wall with stuff. And we get to the pod race scene, and there's this long introduction, and the two-headed Greg Proops has to talk about who the other racers are in the race. Well, who the fuck cares? Okay. I mean, we care about Anakin, and okay, maybe Sebulba, because it's been...
Yeah.
There's a bet, and he's the bad guy, and he's the one who's really great, and so we want Anakin to beat Sebulba. Why are we spending all this time learning about who the other racers are?
Well, I don't mean to derail you if I'm getting off your point, but I wouldn't be surprised if he thinks he needs to please the Star Wars fan base by you know, giving names to everybody.
No, and there's definitely a truth to that, because there's going to be toys.
Yep.
And there's all these... There's a lot of fanboy service in the movie, where it's like, in the pod racing scene, we can't just... Which, I guess we could talk about the pod racing scene, but where we get the sand people, and then we get a Jawa.
Yes, exactly.
For no other reason than so that fanboys can come in their pants when they're seeing, holy, there's a Jawa! It's just like in Star Wars. Well, yeah, it's just like, it fucking says Star Wars in at the front of it, and then George Lucas, and then all the music is the same, and then that's Obi-Wan Kenobi. So why do we give a shit if there's a Jawa? Yeah.
It's as if you were sitting next to me in the theater.
Dude, did you see? This is Alan. They're going to show up again in Star Wars.
Well, yeah. So?
See how we brought it all together?
Right, but that's what
I know,
it is, right?
I exactly.
This bringing it together, but like, who gives a shit? So we're jumping all over the place.
Yeah,
but pod race. And we were talking on the phone the other day, and you said...
I like the pod race.
I like the pod race.
I do.
And it's a fine piece of filmmaking.
I was going to say, like, for those, what is it, 10 minutes? I mean, it's long.
And that's the problem.
Right, okay. But, I guess I just...
It's well done, and it's entertaining, which...
It really is.
And that's the thing. That's the thing about The Phantom Menace. It has these things that we can like about it.
Yes.
Even though it doesn't add up to anything.
No,
because what the fuck is the point of the 10 to 12 minute pod race scene? Except to tell us that Anakin is a good pilot.
Well, Anakin, you know, there's something special with him. He's not just a good pilot. He's a little kid who's a great pilot. And it's not normal. There's something special about this kid. And here's an example of,
right,
of that.
And then at Instead the of end just, of the movie... We see that again.
Yes.
So I would argue, oh, that's when it matters.
Yeah, well, right.
Put it there when there's something on the line. When it matters. You know what I mean?
He wanted his Ben-Hur.
No, I know. And he needs this. It's a video game.
Yeah.
I mean, in every way. Like, not only right. because it's all been rendered digitally, but also because there's all these point of view shots where it's like, oh, that's what the video game's going to look like.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. And again, it's fun and entertaining in a way that a lot of the stuff that follows in the two subsequent prequels is not. But you take it out of the movie, and guess what? The movie is no different. And no worse off. You know?
Yeah.
Except that it's lost this little entertaining 10-minute piece. So rewatching the Phantom Menace, which is the movie we're talking about, right? Are we talking about the Phantom Menace? I like Darth Maul.
I was a little bummed he didn't last longer.
Well, and that was always the complaint. Again, in 1999, you go see The Phantom Menace, and you're like, Darth Maul is kick-ass. What? Okay, spoilers for The Phantom Menace. Darth Maul dies. He is bisected.
Which, unfortunately, I knew heading in.
Oh, really?
Because, like idiots, we got the comic book adaptation.
Really? Why would you do that?
The store got it.
Okay.
And I didn't read it, but one of my idiot friends did. And spoiled it for all of us.
Wow.
I don't even remember how. I don't think it was as mean as that. I feel like he accidentally spoiled it for. I don't know. But either way, unfortunately, I knew that he was going to perish.
And I have to assume that George Lucas sort of kicked himself.
I would think so,
because everybody liked Darth Maul. And he's like, oh shit, I killed him. And then part of me thinks, no, George Lucas didn't kick himself at all, because in his head he said, no, that's the way I planned it. That's the way I wanted it. That's exactly what I had, you know?
I guess.
Because he doesn't seem like a guy who, A, has anyone around him telling him, like, George,
that's the truth. Let's
pause for a second and let's think about this. He has no one around him telling him, no, he lives in this bubble. We'll call it the Star Wars cage. And he doesn't seem like a guy who learns from mistakes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, Attack of the Clones... would have been much better than it was, and Revenge of the Sith, which maybe he learned a little bit. It seems like by then he brought on another writer. It's a little darker. It's PG-13.
Yeah.
Jar Jar's been cut way back, you know. Although I will say I do like the fact that, like, ultimately it's Jar Jar who's responsible for the entire Empire's existence, correct?
Yes.
Doesn't he, like, cast a deciding
yes,
vote?
Yes, he does.
And I always kind of liked that, like, Lucas, A, it's kind of a fuck you, from a guy who won't stop saying fuck you, but also that he doesn't just you know, I complain about Lost all the time, Paolo and Nikki, that they're like, oh, no one likes him, okay, we'll get rid of him. I'm like,
right.
No, fuck you, figure out a way to course correct and like incorporate them in and make them matter.
Right.
Don't just make it like, oh, sorry, mistake, you guys don't like it, what else do you like, what do you need, do you want me to move the chair, do you not like where the chair is? And Lucas, to some extent, is like, okay, people hate Jar Jar, but I'm still going to figure out a way to make him matter.
Right. No, I like that.
No idea what I was saying. Pod race? What were we talking about? The fucking pod race?
Darth
Maul.
Oh, Darth
so
Maul.
Is he kicking himself that he killed Darth Maul? That's what we're fucking talking about. Good Lord, I'm so sorry.
I mean, maybe you're right. There's part of me that finds it hard to believe he wouldn't be kicking himself, but...
Right.
Because, I mean, he really was...
One of the...
Quite cool. I mean, you still see... you know, you go to a Comic-Con, you'll still see people dressed up like Darth Maul. You still right. see...
And part of that is just because, like, the makeup is probably fun to do.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I'm sure.
Cool, you know.
But, you know, whatever.
And even watching The Phantom Menace again, he really has no idea what to do with Darth Maul.
No, he doesn't.
I mean, he just pops up in the desert at one point, and they fight. It's like, what?
Yep.
Oh, we needed a fight scene? We needed that beat? But we get to the end, and it's a kick-ass battle.
It's a great battle. I love that scene. I love when the three of them are separated
right.
by the thing, because you get a glimpse into each one of their characters, maybe each one of their... what am I trying to say? Like, where they're at maturity-wise.
Right.
I'm like, Obi-Wan can't wait
right.
to get at Darth, and right. I love Qui-Gon just right. you know, meditates, and right. I thought that part was awesome.
And again, it's I feel like, and maybe I should have gone back and rewatched Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith before I laid it out on the line like this, because maybe those movies are better than I'm saying, or have moments like this that I'm not giving them credit for, but
I don't
feel
know
like...
Do.
The Phantom Menace is the only movie that has stuff like this in it, even though it's a mess and there's no story and nothing happens that advances the overall story, except that by the end he's going to train Anakin. But I feel like it's the only one that has those scenes, and that's why I feel like I can go back and rewatch that more than I can rewatch the other ones, because it does have these good things in it.
Yes.
Because as I'm rewatching it, and it gets to the moment right before the battle, they show up and there's Darth Maul. It's everybody together, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the Amidala is there and whatever, which I guess we can get to that in a second. And there's Darth Maul, and they stop and they say, "We'll handle this." And they take off their robes, and it's fucking awesome.
Yes.
And it's the first and last fucking awesome moment in the entire prequel trilogy, I think. Although that opening shot in Revenge of the Sith
is awesome. Yeah.
Is cool.
I think
yeah.
that's very cool.
Yeah. Now, when I saw it in the theater, it was definitely awesome. It was like, holy shit, where it pans up. It's just space, space, space. Whoa, crazy battle.
Yep.
Awesome. Now feels a little bit masturbatory.
Okay.
Because I have gotten through the first half hour, and then I got to turn it off. I'm like, why am I watching this? But The Phantom Menace, I think that moment is awesome.
Yes.
And almost justifies the movie. I mean, not quite, because there's so much shit around it, but like, that's great.
It is great.
That's great.
And I had wanted to see Jedi really, you know, beat ass and
right
and you know that was a not the first great lightsaber battle because I love the lightsaber battle at the end of Empire, but it's a very different lightsaber battle, a little more with the times, a lot more
right,
a lot more action,
and
it was awesome.
I think like that fight better than even. The one between Obi-Wan and Anakin.
Oh, I do, yeah.
But that's what all three movies are building towards.
No,
he needed to stick that landing. And I'm not saying he didn't. It wasn't horrible. But,
right.
like, that one is way better to me, I think.
No, I completely agree.
And Darth Maul really is the last interesting villain in the prequel trilogy. I mean, I like the Emperor. He's fine. You know, whatever. But, like, they try and introduce Count Dooku.
I was going to say Dooku.
No, sorry. I like Christopher Lee.
I was
going to
say.
Fuck that. And who's that other dude? The robot dude with all the arms?
Grievous.
Nope. Fuck you. All he's doing is selling toys. Like,
yeah,
General
absolutely.
Grievous is a toy. That's
yep.
it. He's not a character. He's not a villain. He's a fucking action figure.
Absolutely.
And that's it.
Yep.
Fuck that.
Agreed.
So the problem, I say as though there's only one, Jake Lloyd, who goes to Columbia College here in Chicago,
yes,
where you went.
I did.
He attends your alma mater.
Go Bees.
It's,
I think they're the Killer Bees.
Really?
There's
a mascot?
Briefly had a baseball team.
Oh, no kidding.
Called the Killer Bees. So.
And apparently Jake Lloyd takes all kinds of shit and like has a real complex about, I know from people who go to Columbia who said Jake Lloyd is like an asshole to them because... He's, I think, always on the defensive because people are giving him shit about The Phantom Menace. And guess what?
It's unfair.
He's not the problem.
Right.
Right. He's not the problem. The way the character's written is bad. The fact that he decided to make it a kid in the first place is bad. But, you know, you're the one, I think, that has said, like, what kid would have turned down...
Yeah.
Right? Wasn't that you that said that? Like, anybody who makes fun of Jake Lloyd, if George Lucas approached you in 1998 and said, hey, do you want to play Anakin Skywalker? Would you be like, I don't trust your vision, George.
George Lucas asked me now.
What's this thing? Yeah, right. Would you go back? You want to do a shot-by-shot remake of The Phantom Menace? Sure. Are you an angel? Now this is pod racing.
Oh, I've been waiting an hour and 16 minutes for that impression.
That's my Anakin Skywalker voice that I've done for years. And it sounds nothing like Jake Lloyd, but anytime you talk about an Anakin, until you get, obviously, to the next movie, and then it's like, I don't like sand. That's my Hayden Christensen Anakin impression.
Which my wife does a great impression of.
Does she?
She has that scene down.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like she knows
I don't
she's
like
got the
sand.
Yeah.
Oh, it's rough and coarse. Not like you. And then what's the next line? Because I always want to say, you're pretty.
I don't.
But I don't think that's it.
I think it's, remember.
Are you an angel? I'm going to be in the Bunta race tomorrow. Oh, I need, little Greedo. Do you know what I'm talking about? Oh, that scene. I watched three times in a row. I went back and rewatched that scene because I'm like, what the fuck is going on? It's all these kids. And then the last one is like overdubbed. Like, let's go play ball. First of all, George Lucas, have you been around a child? What kid's like, let's go play ball? I swear he's watching Little Rascals shorts. Because the kid is overdubbed the way that like Froggy used to be like, let's go play ball. It's Froggy in that scene. It's Tiny Greedo and then Froggy. And then Anakin.
I'm going to be in the Bunta race.
Natalie Portman doesn't help him out at all.
Well, all right. So hold on. we'll get to that. But okay, so the issue really with Jake Lloyd, not Jake Lloyd, but Anakin, is A, he decided to start when he was a kid, and B, there is no indication of any darkness. And if you're going to go that far back, okay, there's a way to make it work, but like, there has to be a hint of something, yes, right?
Right.
Right?
Right. I agree.
He can't just be like every other kid, and that's unfortunately what he is. I mean, they tell us, oh, he's got these great abilities, and he's got a really high midi-chlorian count, and
higher than even Master Yoda's, I believe.
And every mention of Master Yoda, I just like, oh, we get it. I like that Yoda's a puppet in Phantom Menace, though.
I do too. Oh, I yes, completely.
Not a fucking
agree.
CGI thing. Yeah. Oh, I was going to say this a while ago. There's a whole, the first 40 minutes of the movie, 45 minutes, like Qui-Gon, I'm sorry to say it, and Obi-Wan, they start, they're together, and they're ambassadors, and they're negotiating. We don't give a shit. And then they split up for like 45 minutes the whole time that they're down in the pod racing and all that, right?
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan, like, you stay with the ship or something. Yep. I don't know. Why do you think that is? Because I have a theory.
Oh, I'd like to hear your theory.
Why they split up.
Yeah, why?
Just so we can get to the moment when they get back on the ship, Obi-Wan Kenobi, meet Anakin Skywalker. That is a line of dialogue and a shot. And
yes.
I'm like, oh, that's why they've been split up for 45 minutes.
That makes sense.
And they put it in the trailer and everyone fucking jerks off. That's when they meet.
Yeah.
Well, so what if it doesn't fucking lead to anything?
Yes.
And I saw that moment and I was like, oh, that's why. Because why else haven't we seen Obi-Wan for 45 minutes? And it occurred to me that like, oh, Lucas worked backwards. I need a moment where they meet. Well, what should I do? I'll split them up for 45 minutes. Why do I? He stays with the ship. And then I realized, oh, this entire fucking series of movies is nothing but working backwards. And that's why they don't work.
Because that is great. You've solved it.
Well, there we go. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Take that. I just blew your minds.
Oh, that's a great point. You're absolutely right.
Oh,
it's gotta be.
Fuck. Everything is just working backwards. And that's why they don't work. And that's why it's not interesting. Because guess what? We as a viewer are doing the same thing. We're working backwards. We're not in any uncharted territory at any point. And that's what's exciting about Star Wars. We start with this kid, and he's a dreamer. And we want to see this crazy trip that he goes on that takes us in places we had no idea we were going to go. The Luke that starts at the beginning of Star Wars and the Luke that is at the end of Return of the Jedi has gone somewhere and we were there with him and we never knew where we were going to go. And that's exciting and it's interesting.
Yes.
And there is none of that in the prequel trilogy because there can't be. It's built in that we know where it's going.
Yep.
And that's why it can't. And again, I get back to, we think we want to know.
No, it's
but
it's
we
true.
Don't.
It's true. Because, yeah, when we get there, we're not excited to be there. Like,
I'm, because the only place it can get to is where we knew it was
right,
going.
Exactly.
That's where it has to land.
Right.
I'm not excited. If I take a fucking flight to Florida, you know, when the plane lands, I'm not fucking coming in my pants. I'm, look where we are. It's a, no, this is where I paid to go. That's where I knew I was going, motherfucker.
That's true.
Do you want to talk about Amidala? Queen Amidala? Natalie Portman?
She's just, is the way you put it earlier, she's sleepwalking in the movies? Because, it really struck me rewatching it. Like, oh my God, she is just. It just seems like she doesn't want to be there.
What is the deal with her accent? What's going on?
It's like in and out.
And right? I know, like, there's that thing in Star Wars. Okay, Princess Leia, she's kind of British at the beginning, and by the end, they seem to have dropped that.
Yeah.
Okay, and we can all laugh about it. Oh, and the stormtrooper bumps his head, and that's just one of those things we goof on about Star Wars, right? But what the fuck is going on with her in that movie?
I don't know. It looks to me like everyone is completely uncomfortable acting in front of green screen.
Yeah. Well, and again, she seems to exist just to, like, because George Lucas had a friend who did some sketches, and, like, look at the weird kabuki shit I can put her in. Look at all the crazy costumes I've designed for Amidala. I like all of those. Right. Let's put her in all of them. And it doesn't matter for the character. I was watching it again, and I'm like, there's this whole thing where, like, there's Amidala and Padme, and there's a decoy. And we don't know for most of the movie that, oh, Padme is actually the queen. Oh, look at that. But, like, guess what? We do know that. We've seen all the movie's marketing. We know that Natalie Portman has been cast as Queen Amidala because it's Star Wars and you can't hide that shit.
Right.
So, again, we're sitting waiting for the reveal of a secret that's not a fucking secret.
And that we don't care about either.
Well, right.
That too.
Right. The reveal isn't interesting anyway.
Yeah.
But, like, even if he pulled it off, right. And it's like, oh, she's the queen all along? We don't care. But at no point does he come close to pulling that off.
I know.
So again, it's this thing where it's like, there's zero dramatic tension because we know the result. We know that she's the queen. We're just waiting for him to tell us.
Right.
And that's what these prequels are. We know that it becomes Darth Vader. We're just waiting for Lucas to tell us. Right?
Right, exactly.
And the problem is, he does a bad job at telling us. Mm-hmm. If he did a better job of telling us, maybe we could forgive some of that. But, like, it was never going to work, guys. It was never... You thought it was going to work? You fucking begged for it for 16 years. Show us the Clone Wars. Guess what? The Clone Wars suck. They're not interesting. At all.
Nope. Well, he didn't even show us the Clone Wars.
Well, right. But he showed us clones.
Oh,
and
yes,
so we're supposed
to
be fucking excited about that. And there was some clone fighting in an arena. That was exciting.
Which, if you would have told me before Attack of the Clones, maybe before Phantom Menace, I'd get a scene with a bunch of Jedi fighting clones. Oh my God, I would have been excited. In an arena. Sounds amazing. But
you think you want to see it.
Right, exactly. You're absolutely right.
But you don't.
It's horrible. What do you even think about just like on a design level?
Yeah, I don't like it.
Okay.
There's nothing. And again, this goes back to even the special editions. When he released those in, like, 97, and I went to see those for... It was the first time I'd seen Star Wars in a long time.
Okay.
And I've said this to you before plenty of times, so I apologize. But, like, I was struck by how little happens for a long time in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I started to think, like, oh, maybe it's not as great as everyone says. Because, like, it's a half hour of two robots dicking around a desert. But again... I love the designs in Star Wars, and now it's iconic, and you can't even imagine, like, a world without it, but, like, it's so cool, and it's sort of simple, you know? It's, like, these basic ideas that he ripped off from other places, fucking Metropolis or whatever, you know? It's like, oh, there's C-3PO. Seeing the special editions, it's like, oh, I'm watching, I used to like just this open desert landscape, and it was simple, and it was clean, and it was nice to look at. And then he has to do the special edition where he fills it in with all this fucking nonsense. Just little CGI animals in every corner of the frame. That doesn't make it better. But again, he spent 20 years in the Star Wars cage with a sketchbook. Like, ooh, and I can do this, and I can put this here, and I can put this here, and I have to fill in my universe because that's where I live now in my crazy mind.
Attack of the Clones that way, and I don't know that it's more so in Attack of the Clones than any of the other movies, but that's the movie that sticks out for me. That it feel like I don't know where to look.
It's too busy.
It's so busy. Yeah. Every corner of that, or every inch of that frame is just, it's something moving and flashing and
right.
It's like he doesn't know where, I don't know where I'm supposed to look, and it's so distracting and ugly.
And he came up with all of these different alien races for Phantom Menace, and we get to see them all. We see Gungans and Hutts, or, I mean, we already saw Jabba the Hutt, but isn't Sebulba like some race of Hutt? I don't know. On the subtitles on the DV, it says, he says he's speaking Huttese or Huttese or however you want to say the language of the Hutts. And I don't like really the design of any of them. I don't like the way that Jar Jar looks or Sebulba looks or the dude at the pod race or the Viceroy or, you know.
Right.
I don't like the look of any of them. I like when I saw that trailer originally and they showed that shot of Queen Amidala.
In front of the window?
And she's all kabukied out?
Yes, absolutely.
And you look like she can't move her head because like that thing weighs 100 pounds?
Yeah.
But it was neat. And it had promise, and it's promise that isn't delivered on, and they're, you know, she's a non-existent character. And
they should have probably just stopped at the trailer. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was neat that the guys designing the vehicles for the prequels wanted them to look like, wanted the vehicles in episodes 4, 5, and 6 to be more advanced models of what. Of what they would show in episodes 1, 2, and 3, you know what I mean? Like one through three would be older models, and but I don't even know where I was going with that. But it's just none of it's memorable, and I don't know is it just because I grew up with Star Wars, so I loved everything about it. I mean, if the X-Wing premiered in episode 1, would I feel differently about it? Because I feel like the X-Wing and the Millennium Falcon and Death Star, like that's it's just great design, and
it's called the Death Star. There's such simplicity,
I guess,
to that, and it conjures up such imagery, and it's like that's great. Of course, it's a Death Star, and it's great. And there's nothing in any of the prequels that comes close to that, because again, he isn't satisfied with that kind of.
I just mean, but visually.
No, I know, like, I know. Okay. No,
I don't remember anything.
No. Because it's just busy, and again, part of the problem too is that it's all just CGI white noise.
Yeah,
it's all just a cartoon, you know.
Right,
and that's not that interesting to look at.
It's true.
There's so many just tangents and diversions in the movie that don't add up to anything. You know, there's that scene where they go underwater. You know, right when Ewan McGregor's wig makes its first appearance.
It's like red wig.
And they're chased by a giant fish, and then another fish gets that
There's always a bigger fish.
There's always a bigger fish, as said by what sounds like maybe Ringo Starr? I'm not sure what voice that
Peace
was.
Peace and love, there's always a bigger fish. Peace and love.
Rewatching it, I thought, well, why not make that pay off? Why not have that mean something? And if I'm being an apologist, I could say, like, that's Darth Maul. And then there's a bigger fish behind Darth Maul. But the movie, that's not there. That's me assigning something that isn't there.
Right.
Because even if I wanted to say that's there, the movie very explicitly says, was that the fucking student or the master or the apprentice or, you know?
Yes.
You can't say student. Apprentice is so much more difficult to say and so much less poetic. And so why not have them say, was that the apprentice or the master? Oh, the poetry of lines like that. Oh, fuck. So going back and watching The Phantom Menace, was it worse than you remember?
It was worse than I remembered.
Yeah.
And I felt bad about that.
Are you less inclined to watch it again now?
Probably.
Yeah.
I was much more bothered by the performances than I can ever remember.
No, they were always all bad.
Oh, I'm
except for Liam Neeson.
I'm sure, right. But
even Samuel Jackson is terrible in all of
them. He's terrible.
In all of them.
Yeah.
He's just blank and wooden.
Most of them are blank and wooden. His name is
Mace Windu.
Yeah.
And he never says the line that I always want him to say.
Which is?
I don't remember if it's Phantom Menace or Attack of the Clones. He's talking to Yoda, and Yoda says something, and he says, I agree. Right? Is that Phantom Menace?
Yeah, I think that's Phantom Menace.
And I always just, to really underline the absurdity of what the fuck I'm watching, I always want him to say Yoda. I agree, Yoda. I don't know why. But I, you'll hear me say it someday in the podcast. I'll say, I agree, Yoda. It's not a line that exists, but it's in my head. I so want him to say Yoda. I think because I want everyone to say Yoda at the end of everything they say when they're talking to Yoda. You know that what I mean?
That would somehow make things better.
Right?
Yeah.
Phantom Menace.
I will train him, Yoda.
Yes. Exactly. See? Are we supposed to, what the fuck are we supposed to feel? I know we're, I should be wrapping up, but at the end of the movie, when Amidala and Anakin share like a look, you know, right before it ends with like that dude who's like, victory! Like, we're supposed to be happy that the movie ends on him holding up a lightning ball? What? I don't know what he's holding. What is that? And victory? From who? What did we win here? Anyway,
it's not quite the medal ceremony.
No, exactly. And he's trying to recreate that, yeah. But it's just this weird approximation from with people that we don't care about or know celebrating something we don't understand. It's not the medal ceremony, but he's trying to conjure that
he
up.
Is.
But right before that, Amidala and Anakin share this little look. And he's a fucking kid.
Yeah, no,
I know. Are we supposed to be, oh, they're gonna fuck. They're gonna make Luke and Leia when he puts his little boy penis in her vagina.
In her angel, her angelic vagina.
I don't understand why he even hints at that. You know what I mean?
Know.
Like, it's uncomfortable.
It is uncomfortable.
It's an uncomfortable moment uncomfortable in a movie that otherwise isn't really that uncomfortable. There's no icky sex stuff. Except for there, where we're like, oh, you're a little boy, and now we're reminded that you're going to fuck her and make your son who kills you. All right. That's going to happen. I can't wait to see how this plays out. Like, what? What, Phantom Menace? Do you go back and watch the prequels ever?
No.
Never?
Spike TV plays them all the time.
Yeah.
And if my wife slipped through the channels and they're on, she'll put it on.
Okay.
So that's so if I watch it at all anymore, that's when. It's because my wife puts it on when it's on Spike. But okay. I will not take the DVD out and put it in.
I've tried once or twice with Revenge of the Sith, and I probably have once or twice with Phantom Menace. And the day
I have with Phantom Menace,
the day I saw Revenge of the Sith, I watched Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. Okay. So that it went 1, 2, 3. And I think that's why I came out of Revenge of the Sith. Like, I don't know. Maybe the prequels, like, maybe it works. It doesn't, guys. Don't be fooled.
But I will watch, you know, 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
I'll definitely watch Empire. But if I could watch one of the movies, that's...
You would just pull Empire? That's fascinating to me. I couldn't. I would have to go back and watch Star Wars.
Oh, no.
Before I would watch Empire.
No, I could just pull Empire.
Well, and maybe it's because, like, you're well-versed enough that you can just fill in all the other shit.
Oh, I can't, yeah.
I don't know that I could. I mean, I could in theory.
Could.
I'm sure I could sit down and watch Empire and it would be fine.
You
but,
absolutely
like,
could.
My OCD tells me, no, I would have to watch Star Wars first.
Oh, no.
And then Empire. And then I would have to watch Jedi. I couldn't move on unless I watched Jedi.
Maybe I've seen them enough.
Yeah.
I've seen them all three so many times that it's okay. But
yeah,
if
it's weird. Like, I couldn't watch just the Two Towers. I would have to watch Fellowship of the Ring first.
Okay, this is going to make no sense, but I completely agree with you there.
Okay.
Like, I would be...
And yet I could watch... I could easily watch Rush Hour 2 without having watched Rush Hour. Go figure.
That is weird.
I would have no problem doing that. But I wouldn't be able to move on, like, until I watched Jedi. And then I would feel like the circle has closed, and now I can go watch Rush Hour 2. But, like, I couldn't watch Empire and then watch Rush Hour 2.
Yeah, I definitely could.
Wow. Do you think I have problems?
Mm-hmm. But I do as well, because I'm with you at least as far as Lord of the Rings goes.
Yeah,
that's true. I'm not just going to put out.
And those are more of like a...
But that is one big
That's more of like a continuous story, more so.
Although Lucas would tell you...
Oh, yeah.
So the Star Wars movies, it's all Anakin's story. 6 movies telling Anakin's story.
But no, it isn't.
Right.
But that's why I feel like he doesn't understand his own creation.
Correct.
And obviously he does. It's his fucking creation, right? Who am I to say? But, like, don't tell me that Star Wars and Empire and Jedi are Anakin's story, because they're not.
Right, exactly.
And I don't even feel like Phantom Menace is Anakin's story. That's part of the problem, too, is that there's no real... Whose story is that movie? Obviously Star Wars is Luke Skywalker's story.
Mm-hmm.
So is Empire, so is Jedi. You know, obviously that series is Luke Skywalker's story, not Anakin's, as Lucas would have you believe. But whose story is The Phantom Menace?
I
If it's anyone's, it's like Qui-Gon's.
That would be my pick.
And there's like a tragedy to the mistake that he makes. Right?
Yeah.
That we don't, that really isn't given any weight. I mean, it should be sort of tragic that he decides right before he dies that, like, I'm going to train this person who's going to become Darth Vader.
Yep.
And I know that that's sort of what Lucas is going for, but it does not come across. Again, because Anakin is just fucking Kevin McAllister. Like, yippee, I'm home alone! I just wish that he would have gone with a kid who was maybe, like, a little more somber. And he could still be a kid and still love his mom, so you still feel sad about it. But, like... He doesn't have to be like, yippee, I'm Anakin, woo!
I agree.
Don't step on these micro machines.
So, but the prequels didn't ruin the original trilogy for you at all. Because a lot of people claim that they, for them...
Those people are fucking stupid.
Okay, I'm with you. Because it doesn't...
That's so childish.
If anything, I feel almost better about the original trilogy. Like, if I watch Phantom Menace and then I put on, you know, like watching... I too, when I walked out of episode 3, I thought, wow, that was actually pretty good. And I've been very...
It's totally not, by the way.
Correct. And then Christy and I went home and watched, again, Empire. And I don't know if it was on Spike or what, but Empire was on. And just, I watched fucking 10 minutes of Empire. I was like, oh, no. I was totally wrong about what I just saw. I'm just watching, just, there's no... Like, the interaction between Han Solo and Princess Leia, there is none of that in the prequels. None of it.
No. There is not a line of dialogue that comes anywhere near I love you, I know.
Oh, no. Not remotely near.
Nowhere near. Nowhere in the same class.
If I remember any lines of dialogue from the prequels, it's for all the wrong reasons.
Right. It's I don't like sand. It's rough. There's
a storm coming in. I don't know why that one always stuck out for me. But
is that his mom?
No, that's some crazy old lady who...
Oh, yeah. Right. What? That's what I'm talking about. Weird tangents and diversions. Why the fuck does that... We should have wrapped up 20 minutes ago. I recognize that, but like, I'm going to split this shit up, so it's fine.
Episodes 1 and 2.
Exactly. Why does Anakin's mom... Why is he Immaculate Conception? What does that add to the story?
I don't know. Oh, I'm surprised that hasn't gotten brought up yet.
What does that add to the story? And why are they so fucking casual about it? Who's his father? He doesn't have a father. I just got pregnant. I raised him. I don't know what happened. She says, I don't know what happened. I can't explain it. And he just, like, nods, like, oh. And then there's a fucking wipe, and we're on to the next scene. Like, is he a Christ figure? Is that what we're supposed to take from that?
I would assume. I mean, why else have him?
But then why the never conception? Go back to that?
I don't know.
Ever.
I don't know.
When they come out on Blu-ray, and you sit down to watch them.
Yes.
What do you start with? Because now you own all six in the same format, in the same box, even. You know? Do you start with Star Wars?
I do. I think do I you? Do. Yeah. Because I want to
I'm totally starting with Phantom Menace.
I don't know that I won't start with Phantom Menace, but I think I want to see what... I don't give a shit what Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge look like necessarily on Blu-ray. But right. I give a shit. I want to see what the original trilogy looks like. So, so if I started with the original trilogy, that's why. Because I'm excited to see them in that format.
By the way, everybody who complains about, like, Lucas is a fucking asshole and stuff, because he's not releasing the original, you know, not the special editions.
Yes.
That's all he's putting out. Like, accept it. That's what it is now, so whatever. But, like, at least he's releasing the two separately.
Yeah, no.
At least you can buy just Star Wars and Empire and Jedi separately. You don't have to buy the prequels, you know?
I give you that, yep.
You do if you want, like, certain special features, I think.
Yes, yeah, if you want, yeah, like all the...
But see, to me, but I'm crazy. I'm like, I don't see how you could buy just Star Wars and Empire and Jedi. How could you not own the prequels? Even if you're never going to watch them, how do you sleep at night not knowing that they're there on your shelf? That the spines go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. How do you sleep at night?
I'm sick, like you as well, with that. Because I'm the same way. I would have to buy them all.
Right. I bought all the prequels when they came out on DVD. Knowing that I didn't really like them, but I had to have them. And I've watched them. So, except for fucking Revenge of the Sith, which I cannot get through. I'm going to try.
If you can get through Attack of the Clones, I think you can get through
Revenge of the Sith. I tried to go see Attack of the Clones when it came out in IMAX.
Okay.
It came out in theaters. I didn't like it. I think I went home and watched Jedi on Laserdisc because that was all I had at the time. And just to get the taste out of my mouth. And then they released Attack of the Clones in IMAX. And this was back before, like, IMAX was everywhere and every movie was in IMAX. This was a big deal. And I drove out to, like, Lincolnshire, which isn't really close, to see it. And I left after about 45 minutes.
Oh, wow.
I was like, well, it's the same shitty movie, just much bigger. And I left. And I never leave.
Yeah.
But I walked out.
Question.
Yes.
You went home after seeing Attack of the Clones for the first time. But I Return of the Jedi.
I know it negates what I just said.
Okay. I don't necessarily want to call you out, but I feel
my fans
would be upset if I didn't.
I forgot you're a fan.
I do.
I only had Star Wars and Jedi on Laserdisc. I didn't have Empire.
You really don't have to explain it to me. I just wanted to.
But I am. Okay. B, I've gotten much worse over the years.
Okay.
Every year that goes by, I get crazier and crazier to the point where I'm going to be George Lucas.
You'll be in your Star Wars
just in my closet, creating a little world for myself in a notebook. But no one will pay me billions of dollars to make it.
We need an Avatar 2. Call Patrick.
Do you think that they'll ask me? I have some thoughts. I have some thoughts. And that's the thing. Like, there's Avatar 2. Like, if James Cameron came out and said, like, yeah, for Avatar 2... it's going to be a prequel. It's going to be, here's everything on Pandora before. Fuck that. I don't want to see that. If you're going to make a sequel, make a sequel. I want to know what happens next, not what happens first.
I agree.
Who gives a shit what happens? Fuck that. If I read you a chapter from a book, do you want to know? Are you like, do I want to know what happens next?
No.
Or do I want to know what happened before that? You don't. Trust me.
You're right. I mean, yes. I mean, now as I sit here, I agree. But again, at the time,
everyone thought that.
Okay,
everyone thought that. And I guess this is now the example that we can point to when people say, like, when, like, nerds say, I mean, the Alien prequel. Thank fucking God that just came out this week.
Yes.
Like, oh, it's not going to be a prequel.
Yep.
But like, who gives a shit? We don't need a prequel. The other one is Terminator that everybody always points to. I want to see the fucking, not the Rise of the Machines. I want to see the actual Rise of the Machine. You know, I want to see the Robot Wars. No, you don't.
Right. Yeah.
No, you don't. Because you did, and it was bad. And you don't want to see that.
Yep.
And that's what the Star Wars prequels taught us.
I agree.
I guess that's it, huh?
Yes.
It was a fucking marathon.
It was.
Thank you for going through that with me.
Oh, thank you.
I feel like I just ranted for like 2 hours. I apologize.
I enjoyed it.
Because
sure
guess
the
what?
Listeners enjoyed it.
I don't even hate Phantom Menace. After all that fucking rant, I'm just like, I'll watch Phantom Menace again. It has some good stuff. When they take off their robes and say, we got this, they don't say, we got this, right? They should have. They say, like,
they
let
say
us handle this,
yeah,
or
it's like,
we'll handle this. They should have just been like,
let's do this.
Yeah, right? They should have just been, let's do this. And then fucking high fived. And then just taking out guns and shot like fucking some Bad Boys 2 shit. Right. Obi-Wan should have turned to Qui-Gon and been like, shit just got real.
That's the name of this podcast.
Phantom Menace, shit just got real. All right. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.